You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Welcome back to another edition of The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. Today, it's a special day for me because I get to interview one of the best guards to play in the EuroLeague. A guy that can settle the game all by himself and just about at any time. A guy who's won also just about everywhere he's played, and he's proven it as we speak as he's got his club AS Monaco in their first ever EuroLeague playoff with Olympiacos that'll be starting real soon. It's been a while for me trying to get him here on my show, but I finally did it. Welcome, man, the one and only, the natural, Mike James. What's going on, my man?
What's going on, man? I would have been on earlier. They just kept saying, you got to do an interview. And they didn't say who it was, so, you know, like, depending on my mood.
If they would have told you it was me, then you would have jumped on, right?
Yeah, I'd have got on earlier. You just say, play interview, I'm probably not going
to
do it.
I tell everybody, I'm not a journalist. I just like to do this because I like to get to know you guys.
Right.
But, you know, Whenever I see you, and I always ask, like, when the hell are we going to do this, man? It's like, you know, the Baskonia games and the EuroLeague games. It's like one time when you were with Cheska. I'm like, man, when are you going to? And now my listeners finally get to get you on the show, man. So they're all going to ask me, like, what took so long? Because I kept getting mad, like, when are you going to get Mike James on? When you get Mike James on? What took so long? Is it my fault or your fault?
It's my fault. It's definitely my fault. They didn't, well, it's whoever the media person was at the time, because they didn't say who was doing it. They just said, you want to do an interview? And I'm like, no. That's normally my response to every time they ask. So, I mean, sometimes I kind of get forced into stuff, but if it's my option, it's always
like, sometimes you have to do it. That's part of the game.
Yeah.
I said, you know, this is my show, so I can be upfront and as honest as I want to be. And I'm probably going to throw something at myself right now, but all the things that I've researched on you, all the people I've talked to, all the stuff that I've done, like I said, I've probably done more on you than I've done on everybody. The thing that makes me, like, enjoy this interview or going to enjoy this interview is I feel like I'm looking in the mirror sometimes. I mean, not that you're as ugly as I am, or, you know, you're much better looking than I am. But I feel like I'm talking to a guy that has the same type of character that I had when I played the game. Mm-hmm. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It probably depends on who you talk to, I guess. I mean, you know, everybody's got an opinion. So, I mean, I enjoy myself. So I think it's a good thing for you.
Can you play this game without that character, without that attitude?
I don't think at the level that I play it at. I think to be at a high level, you gotta have a certain like moxie or like swag or like attitude about you. And I think if you don't, you just don't reach your full potential as a basketball player, or just in any sport in general.
Exactly, I think that's like one of my big things. I think that's like a lost art. And because, you know, now we're watching, you know, like Winning Time with the Lakers. I don't know if you've seen it, but, you know, the one with Mike with, mm-hmm. with the Bulls, and every player was like that. Every guy was like that. I miss it sometimes. That's why I couldn't wait to talk to you.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, people are a little too nice nowadays. You know, they don't like to speak their mind, and they like to be real touchy feely. So
we'll get through that through the interview, but I want to get into, like, you know, what this interview is really all about and how it started for you, because everything that I've researched, there ain't a damn thing that's been given to you throughout where you started to now. There's nothing's been handed to you. It hasn't been easy, has it?
No, but I mean, it's all part of the journey. I think people that get things a little bit easier, maybe they don't appreciate them as much when they get it. And I think I'm very appreciative. And I think just the work I put into playing basketball and just how much I love basketball, just I think that kind of shows just in, you know, how I go about things. So I think the way I became who I am is an important journey. And I think it helped me in a lot of ways than if it would have went another way.
You remember the first time you put that ball in your hands, or the first time it, like, you saw it go up and go into the basket? You remember that moment?
I don't. Not the first time, but I remember just playing a lot, like just sports in general, like just going outside with your friends and just playing, going to the park, shooting on hoops, you know, throwing the football, just anything that, you know, kids do. So I'm just a sports guy in general. I like watching sports. I like knowing more about it. And obviously, I love basketball and just being around it. So it was easy for me to pick up the love easy and just want to be really good.
Man, I used to remember when I was a kid walking out of my house, man, off the front porch. I had a baseball bat with the glove, you know, with the baseball glove in one side. Mm-hmm. I had the football under my arm. I had the basketball over here. I even sometimes had a tennis racket in my hand.
Yeah.
And my parents knew they wouldn't see whatever. Me. They knew they wouldn't see me for like 3 hours.
You got to just go play whatever, man. Especially if you got like a group of friends you can go play with. It's just easy to just get lost at the park real fast.
Well, I always had like the baseball and the glove just in case none of my boys showed up, so I could just throw it up against the wall pitching. You know what I mean?
Right.
You grew up in Portland, remember? And you went to Grand High School, mm-hmm. and then Eastern Arizona College. Ain't no one know where that is. I'm just gonna throw it out.
I still don't know where it's at.
You still don't know where it's at.
I couldn't get there right now if you paid me.
And then off to Lamar University, which is, you know, it's a D1, but it's kind of like a D1 that I went to, which I went to Niagara University. Mm-hmm. It's not a big D1 school, but what was that experience like? Because none of that, I look back at my life and I remember being in Rochester, New York, you know, going to Jefferson High School, then to Niagara University. I had no idea I was ever going to make it to play this game. I mean, was it ever in your mind that you were going to make it this far?
No, short answer is no. I didn't think like I would be like a pro or just like play basketball for a long time. Like I think like in each stage, I was like skeptical if I would go to the next. Like in high school, I wanted to play in college, but I didn't know if it would happen. Then when I got to junior college, I wanted to play D1, but who knows if it happened, and then et cetera, et cetera. And I think, completing steps and going to the next step and completing goals, just kind of you build a confidence to where, like, why can't I do that and why shouldn't I be able to? So, I worked hard through all of it and just tried to get better, and good things happen.
The biggest step, though, when I talk to all American guys is that last college game, because that's where your options started to decrease, a lot. You remember that last game?
Yeah, we lost in the tournament. I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember not playing the best, not playing horrible, but I felt like I could have did more. And I just, it felt like surreal. Like, you don't really know what's going to happen. It's just like a way of uncertainty. Because in college, going to college, people recruit you. So it's like people calling you, people, you kind of know where you stand and what's going on.
Right.
But playing in Europe, or just playing pro basketball in general, you don't really know anything. You just kind of, just say, okay, I want to go play, but it's not like it's like a somebody you can call or like a network unless you have an agent. You just kind of just know you want to play, and then you just kind of try to figure it out after that.
Even with an agent, you kind of like put your life into somebody else's hands, you know what I mean? That's the hard part. You know, even back in my day when I played, which was a long ago, you didn't know who you were putting your life in your hands in, you know?
You don't really know what's going on. It's like a mystic world over there.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just like everything is called overseas, whether you go play basketball in Mexico, Canada, Europe, Australia, China, everything is just called overseas, and you're just like, yeah, I'm going to go play.
I had that conversation a few weeks ago at a conference I did where they were like, it was like, yeah, it's like, you know, my boys used to be like, yo, man, I'm going to come visit you in Spain because I'm going to see my family in Puerto Rico next week. And I'm like, no, it ain't like that, man. Or you get the guy, or you get the guy that tells you that, like, yeah, I play third division in Belgium, yo. It's like they just don't
geography know. Is bad in the United States. Our world geography is real bad.
I always admit, man, my first trip to Europe, I went to Italy to play. I had no idea. I only knew where I was going because my mom was Italian. That was it.
Yeah, I didn't know much. I didn't know what was close. I didn't know where to go. I didn't know nothing.
So wait, you didn't get drafted. You didn't get drafted, and the first time you jumped on that plane to come over, it was to go to Croatia.
Yeah.
I know you had no idea where that was, right?
I had no idea what was going on, what was there, what was going to happen, who was picking me up. I just, was ready to play and just try to figure it out.
You knew nothing about Europe before signing with Zagreb, did you?
No, I didn't even realize what EuroLeague was until like a week before I signed for Baskonia. I didn't know that was like a thing. I thought it was just like, you know, like you play in the top division and then like, you know, then you just kind of play and stuff works out.
Yeah, if you win, you just keep playing. That's all.
I didn't grasp the whole concept until I got to like got all the way to Baskonia and my teammates started explaining everything and we had the website and I could check the website. I was like, okay, I know what's going on now.
God, it's so familiar, man. Because my first year, I played in Malaga, and we didn't play in a European Cup that year, so we played every Saturday. You know what I mean? But we practiced twice a day, no matter what. It didn't matter. There wasn't no time off. We went Saturday to Saturday or Sunday to Sunday, whatever. And then the following year, we qualified for like the Koric Cup, it was called, which is kind of like the Euro Cup now. And then all of a sudden, we started playing like during the week, and I was like, man, why are we playing during the week and traveling to like other countries? It just didn't make any sense to me. And then on top of it, you got the King's Cup, which is a whole different. Back when I played, dude, we played the King's Cup all year long. It wasn't like a Final Eight. You'd play other teams all year long, and then you have to qualify for it.
Right.
So it was like, how many competitions we playing here? I'm
totally oblivious to everything going on over here.
Was it upsetting to you to not get drafted, or did you just kind of expect it?
No. I mean, it's not like I was like at a big school or we went a deep run in the tournament. Much like now, people didn't think I could play point guard, so you know, I wasn't. It didn't bother me.
You play point guard?
Hey man, it depends on who you ask. Some people say yes, some people say no. I don't know.
You look like a shooting guard to me, but you still handle the point. You still handle the point pretty well.
It just depends on who you ask, I think. Yeah.
Hey, back when you were younger, ain't many point guards that score 52 points in one game.
Yeah, you know, that's true. It is very true. But, you know.
You remember your shooting percentage that game?
I don't, actually. It was good, though. I remember it was high. It was like 50, 55, something like that, I feel like.
All right. I had to check. I was trying to compare you to my game. You see, we're on the same thing, or you did like a Kobe in his last game and shot like 80 times.
Man, I would have shot more. They ain't let me.
And that's what we all say, though.
Yeah.
Hey, one of the things that flips me out about you is that doesn't happen with just about anybody is you got from a third division team. Well, you went to Zagreb first, obviously, then the third division team in Italy, then to Greece. And all of a sudden, before you know it, it was like 4 months, I think, you're playing in the EuroLeague for Baskonia within the same year anyways. That never happens in Europe, man. That quick rise, especially coming from like a third division team in Italy, because back when you played in Italy, and Italy still is suffering a little bit, their league is, but back then, when you first started, it wasn't where it is today. How did that happen? How did you get there so quick? That's like, it amazes me. No one does that.
I mean, honestly, I don't know. I played in Italy, just kind of went, had a good year. A lot of people said, like, yeah, he might be able to play, like, second division or something. And then a Greek team took a chance on me to play first division. And I played well, and, you know, some things opened up, I guess, and just got an opportunity. Took advantage of it. Well, I felt like I took advantage of it.
What was it like for you? Because, I mean, coming from Lamar, going to third division team in Italy, you know, Zagreb. I mean, the EuroLeague competition is it's obviously at that point it's a big level, big step up. I know with your attitude and your character and your confidence and all the other stuff, it didn't mean nothing to you. It's just put the ball in the hoop. I get that. But did you feel a difference? Like mentally or physically?
Well, first, it was hard to feel, like, going into it, like, before I got there, I didn't notice nothing because, obviously, I was oblivious to what the difference was. I was just saying, like, okay, I was playing for this amount of money here, and then I play for this amount of money now, so this is better. And so then, when I started playing EuroLeague, and obviously my numbers was dropping, but I was still playing, like, good, I felt like, and still, like, contributing, so I was just like, all right. Like, I came in and I'm new, so I just need to figure this out. And I'm playing, and then, you know, I'm just trying to build from there. And then basically that's what I've been trying to do every year.
But was it easier when you didn't know what the hell you're doing?
It was easier, but also a little bit more frustrating because I was just like, all right, like, I don't know nothing about, like, it's like a blank sheet of paper and you've been doing this on this piece of paper. And now when you go over to this piece of paper, like, it won't let you do the same things. And you're just like, all right, like, coach, over there, I could do whatever I wanted. And I was killing. Like, right. It's your fault that you're not letting me do. Like, I can do this for you. And I'm just oblivious at the time. But then when I started getting, I was like, okay. So it's like four people that get to do that. And then everybody else just kind of, okay. Then I'm going to just be everybody else for right now.
And you haven't, since that time in Baskonia, y'all got to the top 16 that year. You really haven't looked back. You went to the summer league, and this is when your NBA stuff, let's say stuff started, the business, you know? 32 point game in the summer league with Phoenix. I gotta think you're expecting to be signed after your performance there. What prevented you and what made you come back to Baskonia for another year?
I mean, I had some interest, like some training camp stuff and like people that wanted to offer me, but I still had like a team option with Baskonia.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Baskonia is not the type of team to just let you leave. So, not saying like there was anything wrong with that or I'm like mad at them, but they're not the type of team that just let you walk away for free. Right. So, financial obligations required me to go back. And obviously it worked out because we ended up going to the Final Four and I played pretty good that year. So obviously that year helped me in just trajectory of my whole career. That was probably one of the most important years.
Man, I played in Baskonia for 3 years. I played in Victoria, I should say, for 3 years during my day. And some of the best fans I've ever experienced, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest, some of the worst too if you're not winning, but
right,
that just goes a part of the territory. Plus it's a small town, you can't get out anywhere if you're losing. But how great was that? Because it was 8 years since Baskonia had gotten to a Final Four, and for you it was your first Final Four. So I mean, how great of a EuroLeague experience was that for you on a professional level and on a personal level?
To answer the first question, it was amazing, but still a little bit more of that like naivety and like being oblivious, right. Like didn't all the way recollect. Like my first year, I was like, all right, I didn't really know what I was doing. And we was one game out of playoffs. Now that I know what I was doing, we went to the Final Four. So now I should just go to the Final Four every year. That's what I was thinking in my head. But obviously it don't work like that. But
you're like, how can they not make it for the last 8 years? I don't get it.
Yeah, I was just like, you know, but in my head, I'm thinking like, and I'm looking around the team. I'm like, okay, we're all right. Like we just all right. And now you look back, everybody on our team is somewhere amazing now, or somewhere making a lot of money, or a big player, or wherever they're at. So I think a little bit we took for granted that team that we had in Baskonia.
Right.
Because I don't think we realized, we was all so young and just so eager to like move on and just get to a new city and like get more money and just be more and more and more and more and more. I don't think we sat down and actually appreciated how good we were and like the group that we had together. And, but that being said, it was amazing to go to the Final Four. I haven't been back since, which is upsetting. But I got some years that I count as mulligan years, so I don't hold it against me. I got some mulligan years in there, so I'm not gonna hold it against myself.
You play? Don't tell me you play golf too.
I'm about to take some more lessons this summer to get a little bit better. I need to work on it.
Oh boy!
I need to work on it a little bit, man.
Yeah, it's a rough
I can't
game,
be bad man. At nothing. It bothers me if I'm bad. So,
but man, you better give up golf now, then.
Man, I'm gonna be bad, but I'm not gonna be bad for long. Like 5 years, I'm going to be good.
I got down to a 7 handicap. Then I lost it, man. I just couldn't. You know, I got
to play a lot, huh?
Yeah, I played all the time. But then I got divorced and I started enjoying life again. And it was like, I had no reason to go to the golf course anymore, man. Yo, I had a long chat this week with one of your boys in Baskonia, man. He told me, and this is going to be a general topic throughout this interview. And man, he told me so many great things about you. He's like, no, he's like, he's not my friend. He's my brother. Who could that be? He said he had lunch and dinner with you every day.
Oh, Kozier, probably.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Fab hit me up the other day. He sent me a text message about, you know, link to when I guess 2 days ago was, I don't know how many years ago, that when I was at Real Madrid, we won the European Championship. And he sent it to me. We started talking. I said, hey, man, I said, I'm interviewing your boy, The Natural, this week, man. I said, tell me something about him. He's like, man, that's my brother. He's like, that's all I got to tell you about him. He's my brother. He said, we spent every day together, lunch, dinner, everything.
Man, in that city, we was both, everybody on that team was so young, but me and Fab was like two of the like really only really, really single people on the team.
Right.
At that point, that was before he met his wife.
Yeah, I was going to say, be careful what you say, Lucy. You know,
oh, yeah, it was before he met his wife. You know?
Luthia's always listening, actually, man.
I was actually there when they met, by the way, really? So I take some responsibility for that. But anyway, when you're super single in Baskonia, I think I was 24 and he was like 26 at the time. So any chance that we got, we were going to Madrid and going to lunch, dinner, doing something just to, you know, try to, give some fun to some younger.
I told him, I said, hey, Fab, I said, send me like a voice note or something, man, and just give me something about Mike that I could use in an interview. And he wrote me back. He's like, most of our good times took place in a nightclub, so I can't talk to you about it.
That could be true. That might not be bad information.
I just started laughing. I said, yeah, I get it. Don't worry. I've been there, done that. I'm not that kind of journalist, so to speak. You know?
Yeah. And he married and stuff. Now let's not get him, you know. We don't need no problems.
He's got his wife. His wife comes to my gym every day, and you know, we talk all the time, man. We work out and talk. You got a little baby now. He's that's a whole different life now.
Yeah, he's way different than when we was in Baskonia.
Panathinaikos, man. Then you went off to Greece. Wait, give me, before I get into Panathinaikos, give me your first experience of the Olympiakos Panathinaikos game. There's no way I can never not ask that question.
My first experience is I was hurt and I didn't play. And I went to the game at Olympiakos and sat on the bench and we got beat by like 30. And the next day, when we went back to the gym, there was people outside the bus screaming at us. I had my arm in a sling and I'm just like, man, I ain't even play. Like, let me just get to my car. And then, you know, I think our coach got fired the next day and it was just really serious. So that was my first experience with it. But
what about the first playing experience?
It was at Olympiakos, I think. It was also at Olympiakos, a EuroLeague game. I played well, too. I think we won, honestly. I think we won and I played good, which is always good. It kind of cover up some holes in your season if you get a win against them. You get at least like 3 weeks off.
But I mean, it like being American, man, we've never experienced anything like that. I mean, that atmosphere, that, because to me, like every time I went there to play, it just motivated the shit out of me, man. I was just ready to like, you know, just get jacked up in the warmups and like, yeah, they're all after me. I'm gonna get them tonight. I mean, I know you got to feel that way, right?
Yeah, I get that in a lot of arenas, actually. You know, but I mean, yeah. It's fun that fans got such pride and just such, like, they kind of like feel like they are the club. Like, you know, I don't know how to explain it, but they feel like that is them. So they kind of just, I think sometimes they forget like the nuances of how our whole, you know, basketball journey goes when signing to these teams. But, you know, fans can be good.
No, fans are great. I mean, without them, we don't get anywhere. You know what I mean? You can't play. I mean, I can't even imagine what you guys went through during COVID and stuff, playing with no fans. But I had a long talk with Toko last night, with Shingali also, talking about you. I told you, man, I do my research, man. I do my work. They don't pay me enough for all the work I do.
Okay.
And he had, just like everybody I've talked to, man, they all had like just all kinds of good things to say about you. And I was talking to him about the fact that it's like exactly what you just said right now. Nobody knows, unless you've actually played this game and lived this life, no one could ever imagine what the ups and the downs and even the middle road is. You can't, it's impossible to explain to somebody what, I mean, I say we because I went through it, but what you guys go through on a daily basis. It's crazy, man, the emotional roller coaster and everything.
I mean, yeah, you uproot your life for 10 months each year just to come play basketball in a totally different atmosphere and environment. I mean, yeah, you get paid for it, but
well, see that if I'm the fan,
I feel like that's the first thing I say. That's not a trade off though. Like exactly. I get paid because I'm good, and this is what I for my professional life. This is what I get paid for, but
just, and I earn that.
Yeah, professionally I earn that, but then it's not like I'm just here professionally and I just get to teleport back home and just go have my personal life after that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you sacrifice kind of like your personal life and what you got going on with home, missing family, missing friends, to come be over here and have a professional life. And I feel like sometimes, like, people that ain't played basketball or haven't, like, moved for their profession or had to, like, restart their whole life, they don't, like, think about that when they're saying, like, oh, you can't go to the club or, oh, you can't stay out late and get a dinner. Like, I feel like that's almost ridiculous. Like, that doesn't even make no sense. Like, there's a doctor, there's the best doctor in the world, and I bet you he'd go out once in a while to get some, blow some Steve off and enjoy his life. So, and he doing a way better job at his profession than me because he's saving lives. I'm just out here playing basketball. So I feel like, yeah. That's always my point with that. I feel
it's
like
it's difficult, yeah. Man. I can remember one time in Victoria, man, I was out and some dude came up to me. He's like, man, what are you doing out, man? Y'all lost last night. I'm like, what? And I just look at him like, do I get to come to your office tomorrow and tell you how the shitty report that you put on your boss's desk? Like, no, I don't get that option. He's like, yeah. but we pay to see you play. I'm like, well, then stop paying.
I never understood why that's a good reason to like get into somebody's personal life. Like, you paid to see me play. Okay, you saw me play. Right. Whether I play good, bad, or in between, or we won or lost, you paid. You don't get to, after that ball, after the 0-0, I'm, you know, free to have my personal life. You didn't pay to see me play and control my whereabouts and put a tracker on me and tell me I can't be out of my house at a certain time.
In my day, I had the biggest advantage in the world. Like, y'all have an advantage now of being, like you said, 10 months away from your family, away from your friends, away from home. But y'all have an advantage of like jumping on the phone and hitting up FaceTime and WhatsApp and all this other technology, you know, to like constantly be in touch with your people. You know, when I came here back in the late 80s, it took me 4 months to get a phone to call my mom. I went 4 months without talking to my mom, you know, or my dad, which makes it real difficult. But I don't think I would trade that for social media today. And that's the big thing to get. Like, I'm like, how could me back when I was playing deal with social media today? I don't think I could. And I mean, everybody talks about you on Twitter and you know, the way you are on Twitter and social media. I couldn't do it, dude. I'm serious. I couldn't do it because I think people with character like you and I don't have that character anymore. I've been humbled over the years. Don't worry. I still have the character in me. You can bring it out, but it takes a lot more than it did, you know, 20 years ago. But I couldn't deal with people talking bad about me back then. Even though my mind was like, you know, excuse me, they're going to beat this out, but fuck you. You know what I mean? But that's just still stuck in my head. How do you guys deal with it? How do you deal with it? I've seen you, you know, on Twitter and do your thing. A lot of it's funny and a lot of it's cool. A lot of it's, you know, and every now and then you get serious. How do you deal with that?
Well, first of all, Twitter is the funniest app in the world to me. Just because people really are upset when they talk to me. When I say something back, they get more upset. And they just, for some reason, they think I'm upset, but I really don't care. But it's hilarious. But just, I like to troll fans just because they take it a little bit too serious. They just take everything a little bit too serious. Like, I think they just, like I said, they just try to control you and just tell you how things are going on. And I think it's funny how, like the fan perspective on things, like for instance, like, they just, like, if you haven't won a title, they call you, like, you're not as good as somebody else who has won a title, even if he's just another guy on the team.
Right.
And if you think of it as a logical standpoint, it doesn't make any sense. Like,
if you play the game.
Kent Bazemore is not better not better than John Stockton just because he won a couple titles with the Warriors exactly. And John Stockton don't got none. That don't make no sense. Like, logically speaking, that makes no sense. But if you ask a fan on Twitter, some guy that played, 15 minutes for Cheska 4 years ago when they won, who was solid, and, he's a good player, but somehow he's better than me just because he won a title with, Nando and me and Milos. You know what I'm saying? Like, that is.
But I don't think that's as important here as it is in the States. In the States, it's always about like, I'm a Miami Dolphins fan. Like, Dan Marino never won a Super Bowl, but he's still one of the top five quarterbacks of all time. But
right.
He doesn't get put in that group anymore because he didn't win a Super Bowl.
True. But I think there's still a level that we won't go below with him. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right, right.
In Europe, like, if you ain't win a title, you could be 105, even though you should be top five. You know what I mean? Just because you ain't won a title. That'll put you all the way down with, I don't know, just put me down with anybody at this point.
You're just another player then.
Yeah, which makes no sense at all. You know how lucky you got to be to win a championship and just, like.
It's crazy, man.
Like, for instance, I played 2 years at Panathinaikos, and we played the two best teams in Europe in the playoffs.
Right.
We played Fener when they won with Bogdanovic and Udo, and then we played Madrid with Luka.
Right, exactly.
And had we went up against somebody else, we probably would have went to the playoffs, and we probably would have went to the final and played both of those teams. And in one game, maybe it's different.
Right.
But just because we played them too, I mean, them two teams were amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you faced the two teams that went on to win it. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. So that's not, just get a little bit unlucky, but then they say you guys just couldn't close the deal. I mean, yeah, but maybe them teams were just really, really good.
Nobody likes a consolation prize, do they?
No, but I'm just saying, like, people just don't think logically sometimes.
The EuroLeague format is the luck of the draw. It really is.
Right.
And I mean, Fenerbahce a couple of years ago when they dominated the league, but when they got to the Final Four, four of their players were hurt. You know what I mean? It's just a lot of it's got to do with timing. So, and I don't know, but go to the Panathinaikos Fener thing. You know I'm going to have to bring this up, right? Because it's a crossover. What the hell happened, man, after the 3-0 thing? I mean, you touch on it as much as you want or as little as you want. It's up to you. But what happened? There's so many rumors out there, man.
I don't know what the thinking behind it was or, like, what was going on, but I remember waking up and reading about it on Twitter, and I was just like, that's a joke. It got to be. And I called my agent. I was like, I'm not taking a bus. So they could send me home. They could cut my contract, but I'm not taking a bus. That's like a 16-hour bus ride. I don't go nowhere for 16 hours. So I'm not taking the bus.
Unless I end up in Thailand on a beach somewhere.
Right. So he was like, okay, you don't got to take the bus. I was like, no, I wasn't like asking for your permission. I was telling you to tell them. So if they get mad, you already know where I stand with this. So then we had like a late lunch, like breakfast that day. Because we were in Fener, obviously. And we went down and just, like, we were eating and nobody was talking. Like, everybody was real quiet. Like, the players at their seats and, like, the manager and the coach at the other table. And finally, I just look at Nick. I'm like, yo, you the captain. Like, tell us something. Like, what is going on? Like, we really taking a bus? Like, or we just going to ignore this and act like this is okay? And then Nick called one of the people over and he was like, what's going on? And Nick was like, all right, well, tell us what's going on. And he was like, all right, well, we decided as a club that we're going to take the bus back. And I was like, all right. And he just walked off after that. And so I looked around. I was like, yo, if you're a young player and you don't got the money to buy no ticket, I'll buy your ticket. But we shouldn't stay here. We should just all leave.
Right.
So, I mean, I felt like when I left, we were all going to go on the plane. But somewhere between that moment and, like, me going to the mall with Kenny Gabriel, something changed. Some wires got twisted, and it ended up just me, Kenny Gabriel, Chris Singleton, and Fotis on a plane back to Athens. And there was a whole bunch of people there when we landed. People was taking pictures of us. And they end up not coming back on the bus for like 3 days because, you can't drive a certain amount of time in a row, and they had to stay over places. And so honestly, I thought they was just going to cut me. So I was going out with Chris and Kenny, just, you know, going out to the clubs, enjoying. I thought I was on vacation at this point. So I just thought it was over. And obviously, that's not how it went. I think Coach Pasquale had a little bit to do with that. And the fact that our only fours on the team were the people that took the plane. So I think we didn't have no fours. So
right.
At the end of the day, they still want to beat Olympiacos. So I think that had something to do with it. But we end up still winning the Greek championship. So I think it kind of just it rubbed over everything.
That's the funny thing, because that's the part that a lot of people forget. They forget that all that happened, and then you guys went in and still won the Greek championship that same year.
Yeah. We were good.
No, y'all had a good hey, – y'all blew that lead. Y'all blew a lead in the first game and against Fenner at game one. Y'all were up by like 18 or 20 and blew that lead. And it was like from that point, you guys – it was a whole different team than what showed up during the season, you know?
Right.
But it's funny, man. Everybody has a story, but you know the couple people that I talked to about that, everybody told me the same thing that you just said. That you offered to buy everybody that you know, the young guys especially, you offered to buy them tickets to bring them home if they did, you know, if they want to do that. And again, I'm going back to the point where I talked to Fab, I talked to Toko, I talked to KC Rivers. All right, so like I said, I do my work, man. They don't pay me enough. I keep telling these guys they don't pay me enough for all the work I do. But Casey's the one that told me about that. Your agent too, your Spanish agent here, Rubin, told me about that story too. And it, to me, it shows a side of you that nobody sees for some reason. And I don't get why. Maybe it's because you keep it quiet. Maybe it's because the people see other things that they want to see. I don't know what the situation is. And obviously, we're going to get into Moscow in a minute here. But everybody I've talked to, man, has been there. And I didn't know that this is, I can tell you, I'm 56 years old. I have no idea how a lot of things work. KC Rivers sent me 4 messages. Each one of them was a minute long about you. And not one single word was bad. Best teammate, funniest guy ever. The only thing that was bad that was said about you, Toko made fun of you because he said you like Prince.
Prince is my guy, man.
That's it.
Prince is my guy, man.
But everybody had this like perception of you as being like the ultimate teammate, the ultimate friend, and the fun guy, which nobody else sees. Why not? I didn't see it. Yo, I'm gonna be honest with you. I didn't see it. Well, when I first seen you play, I'm like, damn, what's up with this dude?
I mean, first of all, when we do like trips and stuff, I'm like the main guy who says, all right, don't take no pictures of me. Like, don't record me. I just don't like that side of the job. So a lot of people don't ever see me like with nobody because I'm never in any pictures. I'm never on, like, it just looks like I'm not there half the time. And then, I mean, when we get on the court, I'm mostly business. I'm not normally the one laughing, cracking jokes. I'm not the one that's talking a lot. I'm not, you know what I mean? I'm just kind of like the guy who's trying to get this win, and I kind of got an edge, and I'm trying to get a W. But outside of that, I like to talk. I like to hang out. I like to crack jokes. I talk a lot of shit. It's one of my favorite things to do. You know, just about anything. But
you like the practical joke on the team, like messing with people.
On this team, no. I'm messing with people just talking about them, but I'm not gonna pull no like pranks on you or nothing. But I will talk about you. I talk about Demo and Leo every day.
y'all see that. We'll get to your team in a minute, man. But when you did this NBA thing and went to Phoenix and. Man, is this like the first time you realized that this sport was a business, that it was more than a sport? You know, between Phoenix, then you go to New Orleans with the Pelicans, you had this two-way contract thing, then we got waived a few weeks later. Was that when you're like, God, man, this is not, it's not fun anymore. It's not a sport anymore. This is a business.
That wasn't the first time, but that was just like the time where I was like, yeah, I'm off this. Like, they kind of just want me to like, I don't know. They kind of just want me to like cheer and like be on the bench and be happy and like enjoy that. But I'm a competitor. Like I like to play. Like I understand that's okay for some people and that's just how some things are meant to go. That's just not my lane, to be honest. And I don't think I could ever be the guy who just sits on the bench for 20 straight games and is jumping up and down, waving a towel. I think that stuff is corny anyway. I think all that waving towel, doing dances and all that, that's not my thing anyway. I don't even celebrate most of the time after I score. So I could never be the guy that does all the extra stuff on the bench. I'm not the guy who does all the extra stuff on the game. So that's just not really in my character. I think that stuff is corny, honestly, for me, for my personal opinion. I mean, everybody's different. Everybody like different things. But I think, you know, I'm just not the cheerleader.
Man, you and I, if you were my age, you and I back in the day would have had like, because, you know, we played 40 minutes a game, Mike. It was, I mean, yeah. It's like, you're an American, you get paid to play, you don't come out of a game unless you got 3 fouls or 4 fouls, you know what I mean? Right, you and I would have been like first and second in the scoring thing all year long, man. Because I can't imagine if they let you play 40 minutes what you can do.
Man, now I'll be trying to buy my time. Back in like, I don't know, my first year in Cheska.
Oh, wait.
In Milan, yeah, I might have had a lot to say in that point.
You tried to last then, huh? You tried to last on his career.
Yeah, now I'll be trying to just get through the game. But
I did it the hard way, man. By 35, I was like, I can't do this anymore. Now y'all are hanging out to like 40, 41. I'm like, what is that all about?
Yeah, people hanging out for sure.
But definitely smarter than me, no doubt about it. But I was like you, man, because I caught the very beginning of this rotational thing. You know, the end of my mm-hmm. career was the very beginning of this rotational thing. When I left Madrid playing like 35 minutes a game, I went to Athens to play. And all of a sudden, I'm playing like 19 minutes a game. And coaches pulled me out. I'm like, man, and I'm cussing them out. I'm going, man, what the fuck are you taking me out for? You know, you're not supposed to take me out. And that's what I see in you sometimes. And not so much that, but the fact that, man, I just want to be on the court every damn second if I can.
I be trying to help, man. You
know, exactly.
I feel like even when I'm tired, I'm a good decoy. So
that's I've told Zelko, who's, you know, Zelko, the greatest coach of European history, whatever. I used to tell him, like, look at, even against my own team, I'd be like, yo, that dude at 100% is no better than me at 50. So keep me out in the game, man. That's why when I said, when I started doing research on you, man, I said, I'm going to have fun talking to this guy. Cause at least he's going to understand me, where I come from.
Hey, man, I'm definitely better on the court. But, I mean, in my older age, I've been accepting. I've been more accepting.
What about Milan, man? We're going to finish this up here in a minute. Let's get through Milan and Messina, because that was kind of a strange thing, because the summertime, I talked to Ruben about that also, you know, that you were part of that plan the whole time, and then all of a sudden, boom, one day to the next, you weren't part of that plan. I mean, how did that come about? How did it go over, and how did it make you feel?
Honestly, it just made me lose respect for him, honestly. To be honest, I ain't really never said this like out loud or nothing, but I respected him before that just because of like what he did, and everybody said he was a good coach. And we talked a lot that summer, like on the phone, and, you know, just about next year. And I talked to a lot of players like before they signed, like, and I felt like convinced them to kind of sign. And then, you know, I just felt like we had like a rapport over the whole summer. And then one day my agent gets an email from the GM saying that I need to find another team. It's kind of like, I'm trying to think of the word that I can say without saying what I want to say, but it's just kind of not like, it wasn't like a very, a grown-up thing to do, in my opinion. Like, we've been talking on the phone this whole summer. You could have just called me and just said, hey, Mike, we had a change of plans. Like, I know we've been talking about this, but I just see us going in a different direction now. And yeah, I'd have been mad because we talked about it at the beginning of the summer and I would have rather you said it then, but you calling me and telling me that, it would just, like, it wouldn't be that much I could have been mad about. I'd have just said, damn, I wish you'd have told me earlier. But at least now, like, at least you told me, like, straight up, and I can have a conversation with you. But instead, you just chose, like, a roundabout way. And now, like,
You know, it's hard because you respect the people that respect you and do something that you would do, you know what I mean? And to be able to talk face to face or by phone, whatever, you know, have that conversation is a different, because the other one kind of looks like a cop out. I think that's what you were maybe thinking in your head, but you know, the eBound thing is kind of like a cop out in a way. But again, we go back to the fact that this is a business, and the difference between this business in Europe and NBA is that in NBA it's a players' league, and here it's a coaches' league. It's a little bit different.
Yeah, somehow through all that whole process, they made it seem like I did something wrong. I didn't like that either. Like somehow it got switched on to me. And it was like, oh, it had to be Mike's fault. He did something that I was just like, all right. I mean, I don't know what I did. I just was at the house working out. Then, you know, something happened. But
that's,
I mean,
what
it's not like I need people to be on my side, but I know it was more just towards him. I just didn't respect that whole transaction he did.
It's difficult, man. It's a difficult situation. And I got coaches that I played for, man, when I was playing it. Like, I'm the same way. I still won't shake their hand. I won't even look at them.
I mean, you know, some things just not like aren't forgivable. It's just like, all right, like you just put us in a box over here. So we don't have no room to grow because we're in a box over here. This is just where we're at. This is just, it's not a good or bad thing. It's just, it's not like I like want anything bad to happen to him, or I don't like, well, maybe I don't like him a little bit, but I don't want nothing bad to happen to him.
No, of course not.
And I kind of want his team to lose, but besides that.
Hey, I've never left a team where I haven't looked back and wished that they would lose, you know what I mean? I mean, Mike, I was so bad.
I'm in between, like, Basco and Panathinaikos, I don't be having no problems with them winning.
Yeah, but as long as they don't beat you.
Yeah, they can't beat me, but anybody else, so, you know, I'll be rooting for them in the long run. And I'll be rooting for my friends on other teams, too. So that's why I'm a little conflicted in my line, because I got too many friends over here.
But let me ask you a question, man. Like, growing up, you know, going through this and trying to get to where you wanted to be, when you were hurt, for example, and you went down and you couldn't play for, like, 2 weeks, did you sit there and, like, hope that the guy that was taking your place play bad and the team lose?
Nah.
Never.
But I will say,
come on,
you
Mike.
Know what is funny? I will say this. I never even thought about it until I got hurt one time in Panna, and like Popeyes like did something and made a jumper to like win or like put us up. And I was cheering like visibly. Cause in my mind, I'm like, all right, we hurt. So any loss that we take while I'm not there is kind of my fault. So as long as we win, I'm good. And I can just come help out when I get back. But then one of my teammates, I'm not going to say who it was because I don't need all that. But he just looked at me. He was like, you know, that's supposed to be you, right? Like, you hurt, but you supposed to be out there doing that. And I was just like, damn, maybe. But I didn't never even think about it even remotely like that. I was more thinking about it like I'm hurt. And if I'm hurt and we lose, it looked kind of bad on me.
Right. Nah, see, I used to think the other way. I was like, man, God, I mean, I don't want them to lose, but if they do, I'm all right. Hey, the last adventure was the rough one, man. And Jessica, first of all, you had to deal with the damn pandemic, you know, COVID. And say, what was that like for you guys, man? I love to talk to players about it because that just had to be crazy. I mean, it was crazy for everybody in their own way, but as an athlete, you had no idea if you were staying, you were going, you had to work out at home. What was that time like? And on top of it, you're in Russia, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I was in Russia, it actually wasn't that bad because they didn't never really close down while I was out there. Like, nothing was really ever really closed. Like, mm-hmm. Stuff was still open. I could still go out to eat and stuff. So I didn't feel the pressure on it as much as, say, like, somebody else in a different country. Like, it wasn't as closed down as much. So it was still like a little bit difficult because nobody could come visit me. Like, I'm a guy who like, all right, my homeboy gonna come out this week. And then like my daughter gonna come and then my mom and them gonna come. Like, I normally have a lot of people fluctuating in and out just because, you know, I'm over here for so long, people be wanting to come visit me. And I just kind of get people in and out just to, you know, keep sane, keep busy. And I don't be wanting to bother my teammates just because they be having families. You know, I try to stay in my own little world. So, yeah, that year was rough. I ended up buying a dog, I think, for that reason. I bought a dog.
You one of those people that bought a dog.
I think I bought a dog for that. I don't know if it was subconsciously because in my mind I didn't do it. But now that I'm talking about it, that might have been the reason. But I still have my dog. And he's still around, and I'm always with him. So I'm glad I bought him because I like him. But I might have bought a dog for that reason.
I'm sure you don't have any problem having people come visit you in Monaco right now, do you?
Nah, it's too many people that want to come visit now.
You have more of a problem keeping people away at this point, coming to Monaco all the time.
Less people want to come to Moscow for sure.
A lot of people don't know everything I've read about the issues in Cheska were personal reasons. I don't know if you want to bring it up, if you want me to bring it up, but I know exactly what happened. And I know, you know, your grandfather passed away and it was, you know, there was a conflict between you and Demetrius. And I'll be honest with you, Demetrius is a good friend of mine too. So, but this is, you know, we're all in the basketball world and I understand, you know, for people growing up, I never really grew up with a grandfather, unfortunately, because my father was 48 when I was born. I knew one grandmother and she died when I was 7. So I never had that. But all my friends had those grandparents that meant so much to them, you know? And how difficult of a situation was that for you? Because I think everything that happened after that stemmed from that. I might be making the wrong assumption and I don't know.
I mean, that was a rough month because my grandpa passed like early in the month and then my brother passed like 2 or 3 weeks later or something.
Oh, your brother passed away also?
Yeah. So I had a rough... I had a rough little month. So basically, like, me and the Tudors had a good relationship. Like, how you say? Like, kind of like the man-to-man, like, kind of like friend relationship and the coach relationship kind of blurred a little bit sometimes, just how much we talked and just how, you know, text and just, like, communicated often, you know what I mean? So I think some of that is the reason why it ended up the way it did, just because, like, I think he was making a coach decision, and I wanted him to make a friend decision for me. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I mean, that situation was bad. I think probably if both of us could go back, we would have did some things different. But I would have did some things different, but I don't like, I don't feel bad for none of the things I did, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no. If anybody gets it, it's me.
So like, you know, and I still got a lot of friends in Cheska. Obviously, Toko is my guy, JoJo,
right.
Nico, Will, obviously. Like I had a lot of friends there, D Hill. And we were really good, and I think we probably would have, we had a big shot at winning the championship last year. But I think, you know, stuff being in God's plan and just how things would go. And, you know, one bad month to mess up your whole season sometimes. So I landed fine, but, you know, sometimes things just don't work out how you want it to.
You said something that's important to me because, you know, you don't regret your decision. You don't regret the way, you know, you say you could have handled it differently. And if you can go back, you may think about handling it differently. I've had a lot of situations in my life where I could say the same thing, where I could have done things differently. And that comes from time. And it's only been a year for you, but you as a person, you know, realize that if you go back, your principles probably would have been the same, but you could have handled something differently. Is that what you're trying to say? Because that's how I felt sometimes too. It's like, man, maybe I shouldn't have done this.
Like I said, I feel like at the end of the day, basketball is a business, like you said, and I wanted him to make a friend decision. And I wasn't thinking in a clear mind like I should have been. Like, he wasn't my friend at the time. He had to protect. You know what I'm saying? He was my coach. So in an emotional state, of just not being my normal self and having a lot going on in such a short period of time, I just wasn't trying to, I didn't really care about having a coach at that point. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like basketball didn't matter at that point.
Well, I think, that's what I was just going to say. I think it's more like the sport didn't matter to you anymore because life had taken over. You know, we put the sport to be where you are. You have to put the sport above everything else except for family. And then once life sets in with your family, that changes everything. Then all of a sudden, sport doesn't even exist anymore because it's just a game in the long run.
Yeah, and I think I tried to play through it and it didn't work. I played like two games after that and they both were really bad. I wasn't there mentally. I didn't really care. I was just kind of in the game. And I think because I am good at basketball, I think it like nobody kind of noticed it as much, like to the outside, but I think probably everybody on the team did. So, I mean, you know, it was a weird time in life. And I think it was just a lot of stuff going on at once. Too much stuff going on at once.
Yeah, and the thing that bothers me the most about it, and that's the reason why I wanted to open up with you and talk about it a little bit. I was hoping you would be open to it also, was the fact that everywhere you look, the only thing that's talked about is a miscommunication and a timeout between you and Demetrius. That's all you see. Nobody really talks about what happened prior to all that. You know what I mean? And like you said, emotionally, you're kind of taken out of this lifestyle. Your grandfather just passed away. I didn't even know your brother just passed away. You shocked me with that one. And then your brother passed away. But all people talk about, and I'm sitting there going, why isn't it only talk about the one time out where, I don't know, you went to get a bottle of water. I don't even know what happened. But it's like, there's so much more involved in a situation like that, you know? And I wanted to paint you to be like this good, bad guy, you know? Because you get this image like you're a bad guy, and you're not. You're a great guy, and everybody loves you. Everybody I talk to loves you.
I'm the villain, man. I'm the perfect.
Mike, you want to be a villain, but you can't be. You can't be.
I'm like the villain that you like in the movie, like that you kind of want the villain to win, but you like him, but he's still the villain at the end of the day. That's me.
You know,
I'm the villain.
I heard this phrase from my ex-wife long ago about a guy that I played with. I won't bring his name up. She's like, he's the nicest asshole I've ever met in my life.
That could be me as well, actually.
Well, yeah, join my club, man. The only problem, I'm 56 now. It's like, you know, I'm not as bad as I used to be.
Right.
What is this Monaco team going to do, my man? Y'all going to take Olympiacos? Am I going to see you in Belgrade or what?
I really hope so.
Oh, wait. First of all, let me congratulate you on the March MVP. That's the most important thing.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I can't forget that. But I know that. I know MVPs and months, whatever, that doesn't really mean, I mean, it's something, but it doesn't mean all that much, especially with a playoff right around the corner.
Yeah, I mean, I think we got action. I think we got action. I mean, you know, obviously Olympiacos has been playing good this year, especially at home. They're really good at home. And, you know, they're going to have a lot waiting for me when I go there, obviously because of my team history. So, I mean, you know. It's going to be fun. I think one of the main things about me playing there, as well as I think it's a respect thing. I have a lot of respect for what they do over there, for what they got going on, as much as I've been opposition to them in the past. They play basketball the right way. They play hard. They play as a team, and they're good. So, I mean, you know. A lot of respect to them, and just you know, ready to tip the ball up.
My last guest was Coach Bartsokas, and man, he's doing an incredible job, man. He's doing a great job with those guys. And the thing about it, it didn't look like a team in the beginning of the season, kind of like you guys in a way, you know. But both teams have gelled, and now you get to gel into each other for, you know. For the next three games. I'm not going to go anywhere on top of that. I'm just going to say next three games.
Yeah, it could go to distance. You never know. I mean, I think we're both – the other good part, the other scary part about this series is that we're both playing really well right now.
Right.
I think we're both 8-2 in the last 10. So I think that's also something that could turn out to be one of the best series in the playoffs. Depending on how it goes.
Before we get in this EuroLeague test, man, you play golf. Any other hobbies?
Man, anything. Video games, movies, TV shows, golf. I play football in the summertime, softball, everything. I'll be doing whatever.
Dude, hey, I'm going to tell you right now, stop playing softball, man. I'm going to tell you right now. Man, this shoulder, I can't even shoot a free throw anymore, dude. My shoulder is so mad because I used to pitch too. I was drafted out of high school to be a pitcher for the Reds. And man, my shoulder now is done because I played softball for so many years in the summertime. Enjoy it. Just go out and have some beers with the fellas after the game, man. But
right.
Man, I used to love playing me some softball, man. When do you want to give this game up, or what do you want to do when you're done? I mean, you told me now you're trying to hang out as long as you can, and I'm 100%.
I didn't say that. I said people will be hanging out as long as they can. I'm gonna be done soon. I got like one or two left.
One or two what?
1 or 2 years left.
Come on, man. You're 31. What do you mean 1 or 2 years? You can't leave me this early.
Yeah, but I can't ever be like, I can't be the bad. I told you I can't be bad at nothing. I can never be considered less than I am right now. So once I start feeling like I might go down, I gotta get out of here. I can't do it no more.
Yeah, well, Mike, I'm gonna have my man Pablo send you my number. So whenever you think about that, you call me first before you make any decisions, man. I'll consult you on that.
Because
we talk about regrets and shit. There's a lot of regrets I still have. Last question before our exam is, if I was like a crazy girlfriend or crazy wife or whatever, you know, and I got like, you were sleeping in your bed and I grabbed your phone and I checked out mm-hmm. like your WhatsApps and your numbers. Like, who's the most famous person I see in that phone?
The most famous?
Yeah, like everybody would know.
I don't know. Who do I talk to a lot? I don't know, Drew Holiday, Kevin Durant. That's probably the more famous people that I talk to on like a regular basis.
And what about just like a number in there? Like, damn, look, how's he got his number or her number? But if it's her number, you're in trouble. She's going to wake you up. But.
Yeah, then I'm going to be in trouble. I don't know. I never thought about it. Oh, Adam Sandler. There you go.
Random. No way.
Adam Sandler.
Get out. Movie. You got Adam Sandler's number.
Yeah, I was in a movie with him. Well, I was in his movie. I shouldn't say I was in a movie with him. That was a bad. I was in like 30 seconds of a movie.
Which one? Which movie?
The movie that Wancho's in.
Oh, okay. All right. That is that out yet?
Nah, it's coming out soon, I think.
So you're in that. You got a part
in that. Yeah, a little small part. I'm like 30 seconds, a minute and a half.
Because
like
I listen to Dan Patrick all the time, man. And him and Dan Patrick are boys. He's in like all those movies.
Yeah.
All right, cool. I think that might be the best answer I've gotten so far, man. Adam Sandler, I like that. Mm-hmm. Are you ready for the test or what? This is it. Not gonna let you go and do your thing.
I don't know nothing about the test, so all right, I'm ready.
The crossover test.
Hey, you're not supposed to know nothing about the test.
What is the test about?
It's the five year league questions. Each one is worth 10 okay. more points. So it's question number one is worth 10. Question number two worth 20, 3, 30, 4, 40, 5, 50. The highest I got so far, I got a three-way tie for 100 points.
Who got it?
And I'm 56. I always forget. They're going to send me a message right now. They sent me a message the other day. Yabaselli, Melly, and come on, Jack. Send me that message, man. I'm looking at my phone over here waiting for the message. I got three guys tied at 100.
All right. That's rough. All right. I don't know much about EuroLeague either. I might lose. All right, cool.
I know, man. I just got the message. Kevin Punter, also.
This is going to make me so mad if I don't get high score. Okay, come on. I'm going to be so pissed off.
You that competitive, huh?
I hate it. All right.
Look, on top of it, I got to be honest with you. The guy that set up my message, Pablo, there's two in a row that they got 100 points. It was Kevin Punter and then Melly, I think. And he was just like, man, I got to toughen these questions up. So you're in a bad place at a bad time. So
it's like EuroLeague history?
It's present and past.
I'm going to be all right at present. Now past, I'm going to struggle. Okay.
We're going to make it easy. We're going to make you feel good. This is like the pre-massage right here. I'm going to get in and like rub you down a little bit, right?
Don't say that because that's going to be the one I'm going to miss. And it's going to make me mad.
Nah, question number one. Who finished in first position in the 2021-22 regular season of the EuroLeague?
What season is this? Is it 21-22?
I'm not supposed to give you any hints.
Okay, my fault. Barcelona?
Yeah, there you go. 10 points, see that?
All right, yeah.
All right. We're going to get a little deeper now. We're going to rub a little bit deeper right now, all right? All
right.
Which player from AS Monaco has played the most minutes this season?
Me.
I got to get the answer, though.
Mike James.
Look at that. You got 30 points, my man.
All right.
All right, you feeling good, right?
Nah, because he's going to get harder.
Hey, hold on. Now I'm bringing out, now I'm bringing out the elbow right here. I'm going to dig it a little bit of the elbow here. Who are the top three rebounding leaders of the competition this season?
Papa Giannis.
That's one.
Tavares.
Two.
Ooh. I should know this. This is going to make me so upset. All right, come on, Mike. Lock in. Go down. I'm going to say something stupid, too. You know what? I'm going to go with... I'm going to go with Mirotić. That's wrong, but I'm going to go with him anyway.
Oh, man. I would have never got this. It's Melly.
He played like five games, man.
All right. So you still got a chance. You got 30 points and there's 90 on the table still. All right, but you got to get this
okay.
one.
All right.
I hope you get this one. I don't think you're getting number five. But anyways, let's go to number four. Which team has the best two-point percentage from the field as of today in the EuroLeague?
What?
The team that leads the league in two-point field goal percentage.
Okay, well, who shoots a lot of twos?
God, I want to give you a hint so bad, but I can't, man.
I would think that it would be, my initial thought process is Barcelona and Olympiacos. Because Saric gets a lot of good shots, and Mirotić don't ever miss, he take the most shots. But Olympiacos, you know, they don't shoot a lot of threes. They fall, get a lot of dunks. But Milan could too, because they shoot a lot of mid-range and they good. I'm going to go Barcelona.
Oh, God. I thought for sure you were going to say Olympiacos, dude. I thought for sure you were going to say Olympiacos.
This is rough.
I was like, I'm thinking to myself, like, he's got to be thinking Mirotić shoots a lot of threes, too, so.
Yeah.
I got bad news for you, man. You ain't going to get this one, man. But don't let this test interfere with your playoff situation, all right?
This is going to stress me out for a long time. All right, give me five.
Which player was the first to win back-to-back Final Four MVPs? There's been two players only to do it in the history of EuroLeague.
Okay.
I need the first
New one. Age EuroLeague. All right. I'm thinking, like, I got some names in my head. Like Saris, Anthony Parker. Who else went back-to-back? Somebody, like, went... I feel like it could be Saric because I feel like he went to like Barcelona and then Maccabi or Maccabi then Barcelona and won in a row or something like that.
Look at you with some EuroLeague history, man. Look at you learning.
I'll be watching. I'll be tuned in. But I don't know if that's right. I can't think right now. Who else won?
Since you can't win this thing, I'm even going to give you a hint. You ready? It was 2002, 2003.
2003.
That was back when you didn't even know where Croatia was, dude.
Like Body Roker or something? I don't know.
Oh yeah! There you go, you got it. Dejan Bodrioga.
Oh, nice. I'm nice.
The other one was Spanoulis.
Yeah, that was later though, right?
That was in 2012-13. I look at it this way. Since we talked about golf, this is like shooting a bad round, but then like birdieing out in the 17 and 18.
Yeah, if I'd have got that four when I'd have got the highest score.
You would have had the highest score, man. And you said Olympiacos like three times, too.
Yeah.
Hey, my man, it's been about an hour and 15 minutes with you, man. I've enjoyed every minute of it. And the part that I've enjoyed more than this hour and 15 minutes with you is learning about you from everybody else, man, and and realizing, because my first impression years ago, I'll be honest with you, was like, man, what is this kid? You know what I mean? His body language or whatever. I know he could ball, but you had that impression from the outside. And it's unfair to you because of everything that I've learned and I've seen about you and the way you're just so dedicated to the game that you take it personally, you take it emotionally, and it's, people don't realize what it is, man. I had this talk with Toko last night. Nobody knows what it's like to play this game until you're in it. And if you ain't in it, you'll never know what this world is about. Just like we'll never know what it's like to sit in an office room, you know, for 10 hours a day and like type, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I appreciate your time. I appreciate you doing this for us. And more than anything, I appreciate you, man. You, like, at least with me, you made a new fan. I was a fan anyways, but you made me more of a fan. And hopefully this interview will bring more fans to your table, man, and keep you off Twitter for a little bit.
I got to stay on there, man. I don't know. It is playoff time. I might be off for a little bit. It depends. It mostly just be when I'm bored. When I get bored, I get on. That really be the problem. When I be at home and I ain't got nothing going on, I get on.
But I think the funniest thing you said throughout this interview that I didn't say anything about was when you woke up in Turkey after the 3-0, and the first, you said, I woke up and the first thing I did was open up Twitter. I'm like, come on, dude, you get a better life than that.
Hey, man, I woke up, I looked on Twitter and I seen it and I was like, yo, that's crazy. I was, you know, I wake up and I check my phones first before I get out of bed. I'm checking my phones, text it back. Look on Twitter. I was expecting to see a whole bunch of hate mail, and all I see is, oh, that's why you got to take the bus. Take the bus? Yeah, I'm about to fly. What you talking about? And everybody kept saying something about the bus. I'm like, I'm not taking no bus. What are they talking about? And I was like, maybe that's like, you know, Turkish people saying for like, oh, yeah, you going fishing.
You're going back home, like, okay. Yeah. To me, it was just the fact that I woke up, I opened up Twitter. I'm like, damn, man. It's like, come on, dude. Get off of Twitter. Hey, my brother, I appreciate it, man. Look forward to I'll see you in Belgrade. A lot of Olympiacos fans will kill me for saying that, but I want my
team. I hope so, too, man. They gotta, you know, if we win, man, they just got to let that happen, man. They gotta accept that if we get a dub.
You guys got a chance, I'm telling you.
We're gonna accept it if they get a dub.
Hey, you walking in, most of you guys walk into this playoff like you came to Europe, like not really knowing where the hell you at. Just go have fun.
You know what? It's funny, that was like one of the things I said that's a good thing for us. We're right. Like so naive to Europe that we don't care about none of this. Like we just walking in and you know, then we got vets who just are ready to play. So, you know, we don't got no in-between where you're a little scared and they could be nervous.
Hey, man, I'll never forget.
They ready to go.
The best advice my agent ever gave me back when I first came to Europe was, no matter where you go, you have to put the orange ball in the orange basket. That's all you need to do.
No matter where.
Everything else take care of itself.
Right.
My man, hey, good luck to you this season, brother.
Appreciate you.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.